Blog Talk Radio.
I'm Ron Edwards, host of the program, the Ron and Don program, coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, if you will, at the headwaters of the Mississippi River. And we have quite a bit, I have quite a bit for you tonight. My co-host, Mr. Don Allen, is on academic assignment, if you will, and will not be with us tonight. Consequently, our phone lines will not be open. But that may be a good thing because we have so much information to bring to our listening audience around the world and nationally and domestically, locally, and except for a lot of things going on, a lot of preparations going on, a lot of discussions about dealing with the violence, if you will. Much is now being centered on the city of Chicago. Donald Trump, the Trump administration, now preparing to move against what they perceive to be the problem of black gang violence and et cetera. It appears that only the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and his organization, along with other individuals of similar mindset in Chicago, Los Angeles, New York, Baltimore, Washington, D.C., Miami, Atlanta, and et cetera, on top of this. And as an outgrowth of that, there is now a final for a significant peace conference, peace summit, here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul on the 17th and 18th of June. So we'll be talking about that and discussing that a little bit in the last half hour of tonight's program. We announce again, stay with us, that we will be discussing a peace summit, one that has not been seen for over 20 years, if you will. Part of the affiliation is United for Peace, the former United for Peace group here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. The organizational structure is in place. Sites, vineyards have been determined, if you will, and invitees, starting with the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, are about to come. But in the meanwhile, we have a peculiar pattern of activities going on. We must take this opportunity tonight to our national, international, and local audience to indicate the very outstanding decision that was made by former Federation head, Lieutenant John DeMonaco in this city, a 30-year member of the Mass Police Department, formerly assigned to Watchdog supervision at the 4th Precinct, the legendary and notorious 4th Precinct, which was much in the news in November and December of 2015. The chief of the Minneapolis department had made a decision to appoint John DeMonaco as the new inspector of the 4th Precinct, which its area is comprised of all of North Minneapolis, if you will. Area probably 160, 170,000 citizens, if not more. Population of the city of Minneapolis now a little over 400,000. But DeMonaco was opposed by a coalition. People are still trying to figure out just who that coalition was comprised of, who were not in favor. In fact, some were outright hostile to the decision by Chief Janae Harto to appoint John DeMonaco, Lieutenant John DeMonaco, to the position of inspector, saying that he was racist, if you will, and had been involved in an incident called Fingergate here in the Twin Cities a couple years ago, when the mayor of the city, the current mayor of the city, was embarrassed by what it appeared to be a young man who actually had been positioned, I do believe, the determination had been made to embarrass the Hodges administration. The Federation, under the leadership of then President John DeMonico, did take exception to the gang signs that were being flashed by a young man who actually has now disappeared. No one can seem to identify and find him, you know, and, to talk in terms of where he's at. People had thought that the matter had been settled, that Lieutenant DeMonico and the mayor of the city of Minneapolis, Betsy Hodges, had sat down, had you know, coffee, and had discussed the incident. Lieutenant DeMonico, certainly under pressure from his membership would be law enforcement officers from the rank of lieutenant down, if you will. But apparently, to the surprise of Chief Hartow and Lieutenant DeMonico, the matter was not settled. And a number of individuals then began to call the mayor. The Minneapolis Star Tribune a couple of days ago did a kind of investigative report of the narrative of the events that just a week ago. It took just a week for this thing to not only explode, but basically be settled. And we felt it important tonight here on the Ron and Don program across the nation to talk in terms of the inconsistency with respect to how government really works and the very mean-spirited attack upon Lieutenant DeMonico. Born and raised in Northeast Minneapolis, if you will, a longtime friend of African American and other officers of color, contrary to what people try to say, if you will, a man who fought hard against racism in the department, even as president of the Federation, if you will, including two very significant incidents, the Green Bay incident and the incident in Apple Valley, Minnesota, which is a suburb to the south of the city of Minneapolis in Dakota County, if you will. In the Green Bay situation, in which two white police officers who were in Green Bay for, allegedly they were there because one of the officers' father was deathly ill, but they really were there to kind of have a good time. Anyways, they got involved in a street brawl with some black federal agents who were there in Green Bay on business, if you will. The white officers didn't come out too well. They went to the Green Bay police headquarters, rented and raved against African Americans and the chief and those of the gay community and et cetera. Anyways, bottom line, they were both terminated. The Federation was being said and being identified as going to defend these two white officers in what was called the Green Bay incident. Under the leadership of John DeMonico, the Federation declined to support or pay the legal cost for the two officers in question, as well as a officer involved in the incident in Apple Valley, Minnesota, in which at least four to five white officers of the Minneapolis Police Department hit a group of African Americans who made the mistake of stopping at the wrong bar, wrong cafe, if you will, and were assaulted. One of the officers was charged by the Dakota County attorney and had to serve, I think it was about 9 months, 8 months in the Dakota County Jail on assault charges, etc. Also, there was a couple of occasions where John DeMonico stood up for African-American officers who were on the verge of being discharged from the Minneapolis Police Department, and he definitely stood up for a Somali officer. We don't have that many Somali officers here. We have only, if I'm not mistaken, six. A Somali officer who just has obtained the rank of sergeant, who was about to be discharged. DeMonico and the union, the union under the leadership of DeMonico stood up, fought for this Somali officer, and the disciplinary action against him was voided, if you will. And he was not given the discipline, which was extremely, the initial recommendation was extremely severe, would have brought about his termination as a member of the Minneapolis Police Department. All important around the country in just the last 48 hours, Baton Rouge, if you will, Charleston, South Carolina, North Charleston, technically, in the situation of Mr. Scott, gunned down by a North Charleston police officer, pleads guilty to federal charges. Of course, I guess you've got to consider yourself lucky in light of the fact that a state jury last year in South Carolina became, quote-unquote, a jury that was deadlocked. They called it a hung jury. That's an arresting narrative. In Baton Rouge, though, great surprise in the case of Mr. Sterling, who was shot and killed while on the ground and pinned down by two white police officers in Baton Rouge. That led to a series of tragedy, including the fact of three Baton Rouge police officers being ambushed and shot and killed as a direct outgrowth and response. And this happened right after a similar and an even more dangerous and fatal attack in Dallas, Texas, by a African-American gunman who had come all the way from Kansas City, Missouri to Dallas to commit this kind of mayhem. This also comes on the heels of a African-American gunman in Fresno, California, who had killed three Caucasians on the streets of Fresno and admitted that it was done based on race. This is something that normally, you know, you did not see done in the United States by African. Clearly, the patience of the African-American community has been altered, if not broken, in some situations. In fact, it'll be interesting to see what happens in Baton Rouge during this summer of 2017, particularly in light of, as we said earlier, and this is the reason that a committed individual such as John DeMonico, who can be used as an example of a Caucasian who wants to do the right thing, who feels that all individuals, all human beings are equal, if you will, and are to be treated with fairness and compassion and et cetera. Because with the attacks on DeMonico, there is now a situation inside of the 4th Precinct, the precinct that patrols North Minneapolis, in which officers may begin to decide that they don't have as much interest about policing and that there are things that very well used to happen under a previous inspector that had North Minneapolis with the highest rate of crime of any precinct. We have 5 precincts here in the city of Minneapolis. And one had felt that John DeMonico, 8 months ago, a little over, when he was brought in by the inspector, Inspector Jolts, that this was an individual who had both trust and respect of the officers, but also knew and understood the community, having grown up in a community just across the Mississippi River in what is called Northeast Minneapolis. John DeMonico's family ran a restaurant, if you will, which always welcomed people of all colors and persuasions, a grocery store that oftentimes many, many years before had worked closely with African-American families who lived in corner of far corners of Northeast Minneapolis and et cetera. But it was quite clear that those who were opposed to John DeMonico's selection by Chief Janae Hartel to be the next inspector of the 4th Precinct were not interested in that. What they were interested in was the reinstatement of the previous inspector, who did not get a favorable review from the Department of Justice, who came here and spent over a year looking at all of the circumstances and conditions that led to the 18-day occupation of the grounds in and around, not inside the facility itself. They were not able, the protesters and et cetera, were not able to penetrate the facility, but they held the streets hostage, if you will, for 18 days, and it was give and take. Government investigative report, which was issued about 2 weeks ago, clearly indicated that the chief of the department, Harto, her assistant, Chris Arneson, who is just retired just a couple days ago after 31 years in the Manhattan Police Department, the only female administrative team in the United States, with both the chief and the assistant chief females, you understand. We now have promoted to the position of assistant chief, the first African-American to obtain that position. Now, we have had a couple of deputy African-American police chiefs, but never an assistant chief. That is the number two person in the department behind the chief, Arredondo, one of the most respected officers and commanders in the Minneapolis Police Department, who is clearly chief material, if you will. We have long watched his growth and his movement through the Minneapolis Police Department, and we think that he will certainly be a candidate for certainly one of the medium-sized cities, anywhere like Des Moines, Madison, Wisconsin, Omaha, Nebraska, Lincoln, Nebraska, Wichita, Kansas, if you will, et cetera. Assistant Chief Arredondo brings that kind of professionalism and future to the position now of Assistant Chief of the Minneapolis Police Department. But that does not make the disrespect that was shown John DeMonico go away. It was uncalled for. It really served no purpose, except now a decision will be made over the next couple of months. He was initially not to take his position. There was going to be clearly a kind of a familiarizing himself to take command, even though he was the number two in command, because also technically John was the administrative lieutenant in the precinct and et cetera. We have only about 69 African-Americans in a department of a strength of about 860 sworn personnel, and there are really not that many, if any, African-Americans and who are qualified, if you will, position of inspector and et cetera. We have a couple of officers, and this is for those that are listening, if you will, and we know that you're there. Larry Doyle, Lieutenant Larry Doyle, who had command positions, who is also a colonel in the United States Army. He was attached to NATO headquarters in Brussels, Belgium, if you will. Larry, a lifelong member of the Minneapolis community, growing up in South Minneapolis. I knew his father well, Lauren Doyle, a truck driver and a man who owned a small salvage company and et cetera. Larry will apparently be moving on. Don Harris, who was a former deputy chief of the department, apparently will be leaving for reasons of health, if you will. And so leaves only a lieutenant by the name of Art Knight. Some maintain that Art Knight was being looked at by those that were opposed to John DeMonico to be the next inspector of the 4th Precinct, but it appears that Lieutenant Knight had other thoughts, if you will, that were important to him. And so, by and large, there will probably, there's really no officers that are currently or could be on any list, if you will, to be considered to become the next inspector of the 4th Precinct. So here in the city of Minneapolis, after much turbulence for the last 7 days, we find ourselves with a situation in which the mayor must make a determination of who it is that she will direct to be appointed as inspector of the 4th Precinct. And this is one of the reasons that, you know, periodically we would like to have our phone lines open, but our technical expert, who is my colleague, Mr. Allen, as I said, is unavailable. But maybe if he's with us next week, if you will, the phone lines will be open. I've also talked extensively about this situation on my television program here in the Twin Cities, which will air on Sunday at 5 o'clock at the normal time. we've been in that spot for, well, my God, going on 27 years. But we were kind of taken back that there was so little preparation by those who were opposed to John DeMonaco to give thought to who it was that they were going to demand be appointed. Now, some say that some folks out there were talking in terms of the former inspector who was removed for cause would be brought back because of the political clout that the individuals who approached the mayor were talking to the mayor and indicated to the mayor that it was time for Lieutenant Pleasehaven to be returned to his position as inspector. That just isn't going to work, if you will. I mean, people need to be realistic, and also people need to, here in our beloved city, need to have an honest discussion about what it was that led up to Lieutenant Pleasehaven, former inspector, being removed. But he was given a comfortable position. He was put in charge of the section or unit dealing with child abuse, if you will. He is a man who is identified as having a great affection and love for children, particularly in the African-American community, if you will. He began a program of reading to the children at one of our Northside schools, Lucy Laney, and people were talking in terms of that was a clear indication that he respected and had great appreciation for the African-American community. Now, that is creating somewhat of a problem, and it's time tonight that we talk about it here on the Don and Ron program. You know, that's what media is all about, because unfortunately, there is a document that actually was crafted by the authorities who have been examining some of the things that have been going on as an outgrowth of what happened in the 4th Precinct. And there is a document, my friends, and it's really too bad the phone lines aren't open tonight, but like I said, my colleague, Mr. Allen, hopefully will be returning for next week's program and phone lines will be open, because there is a document which is an electronic intercept. And that electronic intercept recorded a meeting of all white officers, if you will, just after the occupation of the 4th Precinct in November of 2015. And statements were made about the African-American community, you know, and what should have really been done to those that attempted to occupy the grounds of the 4th Precinct and et cetera. And it was somewhat disturbing because it represented the information, the intercept, electronic intercept. Certainly would leave a bad taste in the mouth of individuals who are true black nationalists, if you will, for the relevance and the dignity of African Americans. And I'm not sure that this electronic intercept and this discussion between the white officers and the former inspector would go across well with a lot of African Americans who are really about African Americans, if you will. You know, terminology was used during discussion. I mean, it's kind of like a Donald Trump locker room discussion, if you know what I mean. You know, the boys just being the boys in the locker room talking about the nigger problem, if you will, talking about the chief and the assistant chief, both females, talking in terms of what they were, identifying them as, well, a part of the female anatomy, if you will. It's kind of ugly, and it's not very pleasant. And so for this commentator and journalist and investigative reporter, I was kind of bothered because I had a different perspective also with regards to people and what it is that they say and how much they care about the African-American population. But then when the old boys get together and they start talking about the, well, their feelings about the at least a segment of the population that they are to protect and serve. That's a theme here in my city, protect and serve. You begin to get a little uneasy. And so I was concerned at this discussion at the 4th Precinct roll call meeting, if you will, and the transcript, the electronic intercept that came out, and during and some of you out there should understand this, that during the time that the federal government was preparing its final report, which was issued, like I said, a month ago, there was apparently a lot of discussion, but things have changed at the Department of Justice, DOJ. You know, Jeff Sessions, Attorney General, really didn't have any interest about and providing safety for the African-American community. So a decision was made to basically not reflect upon this particular meeting inside of the 4th Precinct, all-white meeting of law enforcement officers led by their at that time commander, and some of the statements that were made. But in this case, the conversation was an equal opportunity, a racist reflection in which blacks and whites were castigated, if you will, in this meeting, in which clearly some officers were not comfortable with. But in closing on this electronic intercept and this document, if you will, 10 page, if you will, that was made available under the investigative procedure, a number of years ago, we had an NAS police officer gunned down in a situation at a cafe on the south side of our city. His name was Hoff. In fact, we have a couple buildings here in the city named for him. And terrible time in our city. There was much friction between African-American community on one hand, and ultimately three African-Americans were convicted of the assassination of Jerry / Jerome Hoff, if you will. And so I was rather taken back when I saw in this electronic intercept, this kind of little meeting that was going on at the 4th Precinct in the days following the occupation, that Jerry Hoff was referred to as a coward, if you will, and also referred to as a part of a woman's anatomy, if you will. The P word was used, if you will, and it wasn't about perfection and et cetera. I was disturbed about that, and as I listened to people talking about petitions and such things as that, in support of returning the former inspector, I just thought to myself, I wonder, do they know, if you will, the kind of information that is actually out there? And one of the reasons that a change in command at the 4th Precinct was made. For those in our national and international audience, if you will, we would encourage you to go to your website. You will find the report, which was issued, we said, about a month and a half ago. It's actually entitled Maintaining First Amendment Rights and Public Safety in North Minneapolis. Actually, it should have been all of Minneapolis. An after-action assessment of the police response to protesters, demonstrators, and occupation of the Minneapolis Police Department's 4th Precinct, if you will. For those of you that know how to access the Department of Justice's website, do so. And if you know how to access the website of PERT, that is the Police Research Institute, you may want to do that. As it pertains to getting your hands on this federal electronic intercept of a very disturbing discussion inside of the 4th Precinct. You'll probably almost have to go to court to get that. But you know what we're going to do? We also have television programs and a newspaper column in the Black Press. We have said to ourselves that we will at least post the first page of this electronic intercept so that if anybody wants to question the authenticity of what this journalist is saying tonight on Blog Radio, that it will be there, but you'll have to find a way to go get it, see how much tenaciousness you have, see if you have the same kind of tenaciousness in your attacks on Lieutenant Delmonico, and also some of the same group of people who were involved in a very serious attack on Commander Charles Adams, the most recent appointment by Chief Janae Harto. Some individuals indicated that Commander Charles Adams, a 30-year officer of the department, born and raised in the housing projects of North Minneapolis, his family are police and blue all the way through, if you will. His brother is a decorated patrol officer, if you will, been there about 23, 24 years. He has a son who also is a police officer, has about 7, 8 years in. Also is a heck of a football coach. His son, Charles Adams III, is one of the most successful high school football coaches in the state of Minnesota. His North High School football team, Class A, winning the state championship, if you will. First time a city team, Minneapolis city team, has won any kind of championship. Other championships won the North High School basketball team. By the way, North High School has less than 500 students. In fact, it's lucky to have survived. And so it's quite a challenge to see the kind of talent that is developed and et cetera. Also, Commander Charles Adams II's daughter is getting ready to become a police officer in the Minneapolis Police Department, if you will. That is quite an interesting family. I know I was stunned with regards to the attacks on Commander Adams, but then as I listened to later the attacks on Lieutenant John DeMonico, I just finally understood that people felt that they had the power and the clout and the ear of the mayor, if you will, to do whatever and say whatever they wanted, and there be no consequences for their actions and et cetera. And so tonight, I have decided here on the Don and Ron program, our international program, that we need to have, you know, the same kind of discussions that we had about Commander Adams and Lieutenant Delmonico. We need to have the same kind of discussions about those that were involved in a very interesting meeting at the 4th Precinct in which there were very suggestive, ugly, racist, and threatening statements made about the African-American community, protesters, and et cetera, as it pertains to the occupation of the grounds in and around the 4th Precinct for 18 days. We need to just, you know, kind of stand up and have the guts and the tenaciousness and the integrity to speak to speak truth to the power, if you will. And so we decided tonight to take quite a bit of our time to talk about the situation involving Lieutenant John DeMonico, a good man, a decent man, a man who was born and raised on the northern side of the city, a man who has, as president of the Federation, he was president from 1999 to 2015, a man who stood up for all of those under his stewardship, if you will, and is really unfortunate. But he had the commitment, the most important thing that he had in a small article that finally showed up in the Minneapolis Star Tribune yesterday. I imagine there are many of you out there here in my beloved city of Shangri-La, Minneapolis, the city of Minneapolis. We'll pretend that you didn't see it. But John DeMonico said that his greatest concern was serving his community and serving his department and serving the badge, which has given him such a great sense, if you will, of dedication and commitment to the profession of law, justice, and protection. And so, you know, for the first part of this tonight's program, we want to thank Lieutenant Delmonico. We understand he will continue his service. He has a couple more years before, if he decides he wants to retire. But I just think that a individual who was more of a champion of the African-American community than another individual who does not appear based on electronic surveillance and et cetera did not seem to be the same kind of individual, and that is regrettable. But, you know, in many respects, the city's loss is the city's loss. We are also in an election year here in the city of Minneapolis, 2017, and so in November of this year, the voters will make a determination if the governance of this city is consistent with what it is that the voters feel is important to a city that wants to have a reputation of being very liberal-minded and very fair, if you will, and very compassionate. So only time will see. As we move into the second part of tonight's program, we take a look at an event that will be taking place here. Unfortunately, your newspapers, with the exception, or your media, with the exception of this commentator, have been basically suppressed by political factions from indicating there will be a peace summit, a peace conference here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis, if you will, on the 17th and the 18th of May. Entity that has been working on this under the leadership of specifically a couple of individuals who put together one of the first and the last peace summit to attempt, notice the word we use, to attempt to deal with the violence that is going on across America, if you will, drugs, guns, and et cetera, which no one seems to have an answer to. But the Obama administration has very quietly in the last 10 days indicated that they intend to mount a very significant and effective program of cleansing, yes, cleansing the color problem, the Negro problem in America, particularly as it pertains to gangs, if you will. Well, a entity specifically led by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and other individuals who were involved in the peace summits of over 20 years ago have gotten out front. Unfortunately, for those of you here in the city of Minneapolis, you will not be able to really get a understanding and a reflection. You'd probably do better to listen to national radio out of Chicago and Los Angeles and et cetera, who are more on top of what is happening here in the city of Minneapolis and what to bring to the national platform, not just the local platform just here in the city of Minneapolis, but to the national platform. As organizations began, black organizations began to develop their defenses in preparation of the impending action by the Trump administration against the African-American community. And so quietly, for apparently the last month and a half, a group particularly led by a couple of individuals who were involved in the United for Peace activities of 30 years ago, 1992, if you will, who, you know, 20-some years ago, have indicated that it is their intention to try to head off what is a very dangerous government of sense of resolution and solution for the Negro problem, if you will. Kind of reminded me of Adolf Hitler's The Final Solution, because that's how they've been talking behind closed doors, and of course led by the Attorney General, current Attorney General of the United States, Jeff Sessions, if they can get your minds off Russia and Vladimir Putin and who really runs, quote-unquote, the current administration in Washington, then what better way which has become a long-standing tradition in the United States, to make sons and daughters of the African, the Negro, quote-unquote, the enemy of the people, the enemy of the state. And so I applaud tonight those gentlemen and ladies who have been working quietly behind the scenes from California through the Midwest to the East Coast, if you will, be it Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle, Phoenix, Denver, Kansas City, Chicago, Minneapolis, St. Paul, if you will, Detroit, Michigan, Cleveland, Indianapolis, Louisville, Baltimore, Washington, D.C., Pittsburgh, Newark, if you will, New York City, Boston, Buffalo, to those organizations, and in the South, Miami, Tampa Bay, if you will, Atlanta, Greensboro, if you will, Birmingham, New Orleans, these African-Americans, young and old, and you need the old-timers there too, because they give you the necessary flavor of what it is you better expect is coming. And so in the last 15 minutes of tonight's program here on the Don and Ron Hour, I'm going to tell you about some things that aren't supposed to be talked about and the attempt to suppress this. And some of it ties into a meeting that some of you in the activist community were not invited to. Others of you were at the Urban League this afternoon / early evening, in which a meeting was held to take a look at the Negro problem and to send a signal, a warning, to young African-Americans who were involved in gang activity of what the future and held for them and what their fate was going to be. Now, I had the opportunity a couple of months ago to actually invite myself into a meeting at the Urban League of the GVI group, the Gang Violence Initiative. They changed the name whenever it suits the purpose, but the real name of it is GVI, the Gang Violence Initiative. And what people are not saying right now as we speak to you, because for those here, this is for our international and national audience, for those in the African-American community here, by and large, had no idea that this was taking place. A lot of money has been poured into the city of Minneapolis to deal with what the Trump administration has indicated one of the immediate remedies for the Negro problem, and that is to begin the certification of young Negroes and older Negroes, if they get caught up in the circumstances, as certifiable as it pertains to their mental health condition. Now, here in the state of Minnesota, as an example for habitual sexual predators and et cetera, we have indefinite incarceration. The legislature was to have looked at that and did in committee during this legislative session, which in fact still will continue for another 2 weeks. But today at the Urban League, sponsored by the city of Minneapolis itself, was a meeting in which I was present 3 months ago when a presentation was made by a Caucasian woman who was an expert on Negroes. And one of the things that was disturbing to me was how, and the comfort level of indicating how easy it would be to identify entire families. Now, we had that problem here about 40 years ago. I have not spoken to it for many, many years. There's a man here in the city of Minneapolis by the name of Spike Moss, who is a community activist. Spike should have well remembered it. In the meeting at the Urban League a couple months ago, he did stand up and, pounding upon the table, expressed outrage that there was discussion about the actual, and this is for real, my friends, and can be documented. In fact, anything that we lay out here on this program, it has been my personal policy that I'm always in a position to both certify and identify. We had a situation here. We had a judge here many, many years ago. His name was Judge Arthur. But nice man, they're very smooth and low key, and you know everybody loved him in the white community and the white legal community and etc. And Judge Arthur, see, I'm really opening the book for some of y'all. But Judge Arthur had been to a conference, and they had talked about the Negro problem. This was in the 60s, 1960s. And Judge Arthur, in flying back from where he was flying, had time to make some notes to himself. And Judge Arthur later labeled it Thoughts While Flying. And it became one of the most controversial issues of its time in these Twin Cities. But because this community does not have an understanding of its history, there's no history museum, there are very few historians that are left that who really know the historical story. And so Judge Arthur began to work closely with the county. Judge Arthur was a district court judge. In fact, at one point was the presiding judge. And all of a sudden, some of us young black activists in those days, 50 years ago, discovered the Arthur Plan was very resembling of the King Alfred Plan, which is identified in a book entitled The Man Who Cried I Am, for those that are really literate, if you will, and who have really understood what is happening. It was a titanic battle because at one point, Judge Arthur, the county of the state of Minnesota, had actually designated a facility in a community called Glen Lake, which is just west of here, that also is a area that in which the boys' home and girls' home for delinquent children is located. But it's in a very forest area, if you will. In fact, when I first went out and looked at it, when we discovered the documents and et cetera, it reminded me of some of the places where the Nazis put their oratoriums, dealing with cremation of Jews and others, if you will. So there was a titanic battle. For those of you that say that you are astute, if you will, and proficient at recovering information and et cetera, we suggest you take a look at the Minneapolis Star Tribune in the late 1960s and the issue of the King Arthur Plan, and feel free to incorporate into the search engine the name of Ronald A. Edwards, this commentator, historian, and et cetera. It was a frightening plan. And what it included was the rounding up of entire African-American families. Once it was determined that one member of the family was, quote-unquote, a threat to, quote-unquote, public safety and et cetera. Well, today, almost 50 years later, in a meeting at the Minneapolis Urban League, that plan was put back into discussion. And unfortunately, many of you that were there early this evening, don't have a clue. And I can imagine that probably 90% of you have no knowledge of the King Arthur Plan, one of the most dangerous plans ever put together as pertains for the incarceration of an entire race of people, entire families, and et cetera. Now, 5 months ago, when I attended a meeting at the Urban League, in which actually I was not invited, I was joined by a colleague of you know, like mindset and et cetera, who understands what this is about. I was not necessarily shocked, but it amazed me at the number of some of you that were sitting around the table that did not understand this was deja vu, that what those people were talking about that day in the Minneapolis Urban League and what they were talking about this evening in that same location was exactly taken from the pages of the King Arthur Plan, a plan developed by a sitting white Hennepin County judge. In fact, it was interesting because today you had the county attorney, Mr. Freeman, who, by the way, was a protege of Judge Arthur, if you will. And it was interesting that, according to the reliable sources, that Mike Freeman was talking in terms and warning the young African-American men about how they needed to get their lives turned around and get themselves straightened out or what would befall them. But what they don't know is that because they were invited to this meeting that took place this afternoon here in our beloved city, they are already targeted, their families are targeted, their loved ones are targeted, and they are now being reviewed for certification as mentally deficient and habitual mental conditions, habitual, if you will, which means incarceration for an indefinite period and time. That is a part of what the Trump plan is, and places like Chicago. And so we go back now to the conference, which will take place here in the Twin Cities and Minneapolis on the 17th and 18th of June. There are individuals in Chicago, led by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and others, who recognize and remember the history, if you will. Now, there are some individuals who at one point used to talk to Minister Farrakhan about the King Arthur Plan, as it was identified here. We encourage you, we challenge you tonight from our broadcast studios here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. We challenge you, as we did just minutes ago, go to your computer, access the Minneapolis Star Tribune, or access the memoirs, if you will, of Ronald A. Edwards. Take a look at the history. And then, using your little mouse, if you will, call up the King Arthur Plan. By the way, the full name of the judge, for those scrambling, was Judge Lindsay Arthur. Good man, good man, good man, good man. But then there were many good people in the Third Reich who just did not understand how many people were going to die. The new, quote-unquote, world order was put into peace. I repeat for you again that one of the things that was allowed to happen today, which was a follow-up of a meeting that some of you were in, and that was a meeting that I was in. Oh, by the way, I also am aware, and I pass this back to the health department and the SEP, who is handling the millions of dollars that are being pushed into the city of Minneapolis. Part of it, the recast money, and we may go into greater detail over the next couple of weeks. Yes, the recast program, which we purposely touched on last week on our national and world program, the money is being poured into the health department of the city of Minneapolis, the certification process that is already at play. Those young men that were in that meeting this afternoon have no idea that they have already been certified. And at the particular point that a decision is made to send in these special teams to confront them about what is their perceived evidence, if you will, and description of the evidence that is perceived, that they and their entire incarcerated. I repeat that again. They and their entire family, irrespective of any criminality or any actions that were in violation of the law and the Constitution, the entire family will be swooped up and put in a detention facility, if you will. That is what is happening. It is one of the reasons that a move is now afoot to try to block the peace summit that is to take place here in the city of Minneapolis on the 17th and the 18th of June. It all has to do. I have been quiet for a long time. I've watched with great sorrow because it is quite clear to me there are so many people here that have no idea. They don't have a clue on the narrative, the scenario, and the plan afoot. Only those of us that fought that battle over 40-some years ago understand what the King Arthur plan. Again, Judge Lindsay Arthur. That's the name. Also, you want to take a look at the linkage between Judge Lindsay Arthur, the African-American leadership group, the original leadership group, the Urban Rangers, and et cetera, and that titanic battle that was fought in this town to try to preserve the constitutional rights of African-American citizens. Mike Freeman, you know who Judge Lindsay Arthur was. You were a great student of his. In fact, you were enthralled, you were engulfed by his reflections in the document entitled Thoughts While Flying, the Arthur Plan. We were not supposed to talk about it, my friends, but there are some of us that are still there, still remember the shame on one hand and the shivers that it sent through the constitutional fiber of this city. It was a dangerous plan then. It is a dangerous plan now. It is fully activated. It is fully in play. And how people address it, I really don't know. But I have to say that because of communication and reflection between the Nation of Islam, Minister Farrakhan, the Honorable Minister, and others who were involved in the Peace Summit of 1992, maybe there will be enough time to prepare a defense and to expose what is about to happen, not only here in Minneapolis and the Twin Cities, but across the country. Trump administration moves towards, quote unquote, a solution, a final solution for the Negro problem in America. That's just how serious it is, my friend. I know that many of y'all don't want to address it, if you will. You don't want to reach out for the truth, because it is better to be blind than to walk with a cane. And some people are so suicidal, knowing that they are blinded, knowing they're walking with a cane, and knowing that there is a cliff in front of them, would rather commit suicide than stand up for their rights and stand up for the rights of those who are the least of us, the children and the elderly, if you will. Again, Judge Lindsay Arthur, judge of the Hennepin County District Court. The Star Tribune has the information. They have the documentation. That's why there's been discussions inside of the Star Tribune about should we touch this. They had thought that some of us had forgotten the King of the Lindsay Arthur. We used to call it King Arthur Plan, if you will. Oh, it's there in the archives, if you will. It is also in the archives of this commentator. It is a dangerous plan. We repeat again what we said just minutes ago. It was a dangerous plan then. It is a dangerous plan now. And yet just this evening at the Minneapolis Urban League, about 30 of you young men were brought in, and you were told what your fate will be, though you did not understand that you are already on the enemy's list. Sad commentary, my friends. Extremely sad commentary. So next week, maybe my associate, Mr. Alvin, will be back. We'll open the phone lines, if you will. Feel free to call in. But more importantly, if you really are concerned, why don't you take the opportunity to ask the question yourself? Why don't you ask the question of the county attorney and the city of Minneapolis to explain to you what the similarities are between what was discussed over the last, what has been discussed over the last number of days, and what is in the plan as it pertains to the King Arthur plan. Do that and ask for a more public discussion of what has been committed to, and that the Bloomberg Foundation has committed $5 million to Minneapolis to begin to put this plan into operational mode, if you will. These people are not playing, and they've got the money to deal with it. And only individuals such as the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan stand between us and, quote-unquote, the shadows, if you will, that represent genocide, an action taken against the sons and daughters of the African. We thank you for listening. We thank you for recording. We assume some of you have. And by the way, John DeMonaco was an individual that it is unfortunate that the community lost. On behalf of my associate, Mr. Allen, we will be back with you next week. I'm Ron Edwards. This is the Don and Ron Hour. Good night.